Hi, I'm Peter Donalds in for Kathleen Dunn today. The Simpsons starts its, 18th, 19th season. We'll ask our guest in the fall. The networks are announcing their fall lineup and saying goodbye to old shows as the TV season ends. And we thought we'd spend this hour talking about television. The new season, the old season, the impact of television. $48 billion a year advertisers spend on television advertising. So it's still a big industry despite all of the competition from cable television and other digital formats. So this hour, what's your favorite show? What are you looking forward to in the fall? What are you going to miss that's been canceled? We'll talk TV this hour. Our guest is Robert J. Thompson, founding director of the Bleier Center for Television and Popular Culture at Syracuse University, where he is a professor of television and popular culture. We hope you'll join the program this hour. Let us know what you think, whether you are a fan of television or one of the growing number of people who have just had enough. 800-486-8655 is our toll-free number. Again, 800-486-8655. If you're in Milwaukee, you can dial locally, 414-227-2050. Robert Thompson, welcome to Wisconsin Public Radio.
Thanks for having me.
So what's happening in New York this week is called the Upfront?
Oh, yeah, the Upfronts. Everybody, each one of the networks unveils their new programs, and they sit down with the advertisers and try to sell them as many commercials ahead of time as they possibly can. And to assist in their doing this, there's a lot of dancing people and confetti and Jerry Seinfeld and you name it.
And it all gets very kind of silly. There's a lot of hype. And
it's like P.T. Barnum, yeah. I mean, it's kind of like the circus coming to town.
So there are kind of two things going on here. The big money is changing hands this week. So from an industry perspective, it's a really big deal. Also, of course, the press releases come out and the newspapers are filled with the stories, and TV fans are anxiously awaiting the news about both the new season and what might be canceled. So any notable cancellations from your view?
Well, a lot of people saw a lot of them coming, and some of the shows have already left. King of Queens, for example, Gilmore Girls, Seventh Heaven, which really leaves us without kind of a standard family television program or television program about a family, which, of course, we used to have. Used to be the basic unit of TV for a while. Law and Order got to come back, and that was looking a little shaky for it for a while, and it's still now going to get another chance to take a run at that 20-year Gunsmoke run. Friday Night Lights got to come back, the NBC show, which...
And they're finally putting it on Friday night.
Yeah, right. I don't know if that's going to help it, but we'll see. 30 Rock came back, which is finally starting to build an audience, but unfortunately, Studio 60 on the Sunset Strip, which I thought was a great show by Aaron Sorkin, who did The West Wing.
You know, I did, too. I'm a big fan of Aaron Sorkin. Has he got anything else in the hopper?
Not for this fall. Nothing of his. He's a Syracuse graduate, so we're a big fan of his here as well. But that was a really good show, but it could never get an audience. It started low, and it got lower. So I hope they're going to play off the rest of the ones they've got made, but that's not coming.
Yeah, and for those who don't remember, Aaron Sorkin is the man behind West Wing.
Right, and he used to write virtually every episode of that and of Studio 60 as well, and you can tell in a second an Aaron Sorkin script because everybody talks in Sorkin language, which no regular human being speaks like.
I know, that's one of the reasons I loved it. Was that highly autobiographical, do you suppose?
Well, he never worked in comedy, so he started out as a playwright. Then, of course, he did movies. And then got into television with Sports Night. So he had never worked in a Saturday Night Live type of environment, but he seemed to have done his research pretty well.
Yeah, just noticed that the main character was a writer, I thought maybe.
Right. Oh, I'm sure there was a lot of autobiographical stuff there. And yes, in that respect, you could, homages to various, playwrights and movie makers and TV people that he admired. He was certainly pouring a lot of himself into that. On that respect, you're right. I think one of its problems was it was a show about behind the scenes at a Saturday Night Live type of program in an era where we don't care that much about the original Saturday Night Live anymore. 30 Rock, I think, is managing a little bit better than that one did because it's a comedy and it's in a much lighter tone. Tina Fey once said, if Studio 60 is Schindler's List, 30 Rock is Hogan's Heroes.
I sidetracked you a little bit. Other notables, cancellations, or?
I think no other real surprises that people didn't see coming.
You mentioned the loss of some family programs. Are there certain genres that we see trending or waning?
Well, not as many new reality TV shows this fall as we've seen in previous years, which I think we kind of expected. If anybody thinks that means reality TV is going away, however, they should think again, because it's not going to go anywhere. It's going to continue to be part of the schedule. But the big burst that we saw since Survivor debuted in May of 2000 seems to be reaching a certain kind of equilibrium. On the other side, the genre that seems to be absolutely exploding is fantasy slash supernatural slash science fiction, with the success of both Lost and Heroes. I think, by my count on the new schedule, there are 9 supernatural, one way or the other, kinds of things, from a remake of Bionic Woman to the CW's Reaper, about a 21-year-old who discovers on his birthday that his parents have sold his soul to the devil. I hate when that happens.
And, I guess a lot of us thought that the reality phenomenon would come and go, but it's settling into a permanent spot, you think?
Oh, I think so. It's so versatile. It when it's done well, it can be so compellingly interesting. And even when it's done well, stupidly. I mean, there are some incredibly kind of cheesy shows like The Bachelor, which when they're cooking, they can really be a lot of fun. So it's reality is the universal donor. It can mate with just about anything and work if well executed. So it's not going to go away, but it is. We knew it was going to eventually kind of settle into its share of the schedule, and a lot fewer on the fall lineups, although CW just announced a show called Farmer Takes a Wife, and I don't think I even have to tell you what that's going to be about.
How about the sitcom? Is the sitcom dead, or
no,
there aren't
but
that many
left? Certainly having a hard time of it. CBS and NBC, the original two networks that go back to the 1920s, have got the sum total of one comedy being introduced new. They've got other returning ones, but there's only one new comedy between the two of them. CBS has one, and NBC has exactly zero. They do have one scheduled for a mid-season replacement. And this, I think, is an enormous mistake for NBC. They dominated for over 20 years, starting in the mid-80s and until relatively recently. And yes, they had their dramas like Hill Street Blues and Law and Order and ER, but their bread and butter was the comedies, that Thursday night must-see lineup.
Cheers, Seinfeld.
And people are saying, oh, it's in the 21st century, sitcoms are irrelevant. Right up to its last episode, Friends was a number one show, and it was about as old-fashioned of a sitcom as you can get. You can start a night with these things. You can build lineups like Thursday night was for NBC. And in this age of the Internet and modular viewing and all of the rest of it, the half-hour, easy-to-watch sitcom is still, I think, the most viable genre out there. The problem with the sitcom is, and this is why it's in such a moribund state right now, is that it's so hard to find people who can write really good sitcoms. Back in the 70s, we would make a hit out of dumb shows like Gimme a Break and Facts of Life.
Yeah, you get a few good catchphrases, and
right,
you're set.
Exactly, and that was enough. We hadn't been taught to expect others. By the time we went through 25 years of Taxi and Cheers and Seinfeld and Friends and Cosby, we expect an awful lot of a half-hour sitcom, and the networks have been desperately trying to find the next batch of those shows, and they're not succeeding.
So with these genres, we're talking about crime, family shows, sitcoms, reality. Do they reflect a larger trend in the culture? Is there a push-pull? Who's pulling the cart here?
Yeah, well, you know, it's always so tempting to make these broad sociological conclusions. I mean, the most tempting one this time is to say, okay, 9 shows about supernatural kinds of things and bionic heroes and all the rest of it. This is because we're in hard times, we're in a war, and we're looking for escapism. But, you know, I don't know that that really explains it. It's certainly part of the recipe. Obviously, the kinds of things that we find entertaining and therefore what networks give to us to entertain us reflect the state of the culture at any given time. So it's not like it's completely irrelevant. But you can find generic bursts of the kind that are happening now in times when we weren't at war and when the social situations were very different. I think a lot of this stuff has more to do with the dynamics of copying what's worked in the past. I think all this supernatural stuff has got less to do with the war and the fear of our future and everything to do with the fact that Lost and Heroes were big hits and everybody wants to catch that lightning in a bottle again.
Yeah. We're talking with Robert J. Thompson of Syracuse University, professor of television and popular culture, about the television season that's just ending, about the fall season that's just been announced, and the impact on the culture here in America. Join the program, won't you? 800-486-8655. Have you got a favorite show that's been canceled? Have you got one in the fall season you're looking forward to? Let's talk TV. 800-486-8655. Robert Thompson, how about politics and the news and the war? I know 60 Minutes is coming back for its 40th season.
Yeah.
Is that still a strong part of the TV grid? Shows like 2020 and Dateline?
It still is, not in the, if you remember back in the 90s, even 80s, there were times when Dateline was up to three nights a week. It was 2020 and Primetime Live and 60 Minutes. I mean, for a while there, before reality kicked in, it looked like the news magazine was going to take over the entire schedule. That's certainly not the case now, but there's still some space for that. Again, it's reached a certain kind of equilibrium. Surprisingly, of the new shows, however, that have been introduced, not only do we not see new attempts of doing lots of documentary and nonfiction and all the rest of it, which you might expect in the times that we're living in, you don't even see a lot of shows dealing with contemporary issues coming out in the fictional programming. We had that Stephen Bochco show Over There, which FX did a couple of years ago, and that never went anywhere. And as I look down the list of the dramas that have been introduced, very few of them deal with contemporary issues. With one exception, which I think is the show I'm looking most forward to, is Fox is doing a show called K-ville, which is about cops in post-Katrina New Orleans.
Hmm.
And that sounds like that could be really, really interesting, though, of course, a sentence description doesn't tell us whether it's going to be any good.
Yeah. And the guys who write those sentence descriptions make a lot of money. That's a pretty important pitch, isn't it?
Yeah, it is, because you're right. You very astutely pointed out up on top, which is that these upfronts are about two things. One is for the big shots in advertising and TV to get together and decide who's going to give who how much money.
Mm-hmm.
But the second thing you pointed out, which is just as important, is this is an enormous period of promotion. The very fact that we are having this conversation demonstrates that they use this as an opportunity to get the buzz going, to get people talking about these shows. These upfronts are every bit as effective as the actual on-air promotions that will begin running in a month or two.
Hmm. I want to go back just for a second to the news magazines. They really started going toward the NBC had the To Catch a Predator, and,
right.
and others they'll kind of focus on a sensational murder story. Why is it that these news magazines are? I don't mean to ask an obvious question, but talk about that trend.
No, it's a good question, because it's an interesting thing about the news magazine, which is that it's very versatile. On the nightly news, you can only do the nightly news in kind of the straight, legit sort of way, and therefore nightly news has its own ratings issues and its own demographic problems. You can't get young people to watch it and all the rest of it. The thing about a news magazine is it can really be a chameleon. When you've got really serious breaking news going on, Hurricane Katrina, the September 11th disaster, the war, whatever. You can take those news magazines, and those can immediately kick into serious news coverage and reportage. However, when you want to pay the bills during the rest of the periods between big breaking news things, you can put them into this much more tabloid type of mode. You can do stories about teachers who are sleeping with their students. You can do stories like To Catch a Predator. A show like Dateline is incredibly versatile in that it can go almost to the state of a kind of sleazy reality show, and it can then immediately shift gears and do really serious coverage. And that's a useful versatility. Now, some of them don't. 60 Minutes never does the Catch a Predator kind of thing, though they've done some stories that get pretty close.
Yeah. We're talking with Robert Thompson of Syracuse University. We're talking TV this hour. Quick break, and then right back to your calls at 800-486-8655. Peter Donald's in for Kathleen Dunn. We're talking with Robert Thompson of Syracuse University, professor of television and popular culture, about the old season coming to an end now and the new season just announced for next year. We go to the phones and talk with Steve from Merrill. Hi, Steve.
Hello there. Hello, Professor Thompson.
Hello.
I was listening to your comments, and I guess I agree that there's a dearth of good writing on sitcoms, and I remember those must-see TV days and how much fun those were. But I want to ask you some specifics. You mentioned 30 Rock, and that seems like a pretty good show, but also a couple of others that NBC has, and I'd like your opinion of them and their chances for survival. Is My Name is Earl and The Office. I know The Office was struggling for a while. How's it doing now?
Well, it's still struggling, but it's probably got more attention than any other comedy on the air. And this is a favorite for people to watch online and on their cell phones and all of the rest of it. I think if NBC were in first place right now, The Office could be a lot more endangered than it is. Because they're not in first place, they've got a very shallow bench. The Office, I think, is safe. My name is, and I'm glad. I think it's a great show. I used to love the British version. When they came up with the American one, I kind of resented it. How dare you remake this great show? And now I have to say I think the American one is better than the British one. Earl, a little less buzz, though that still gets a lot more acclaim. And given the entire run of what the comedy's on the air, My Name is Earl is one of the best ones out there. It's strange, though, that the highest-rated comedy and the only one consistently getting in the top 10 is 2.5 Men. Which is hardly a brilliant example of the form.
It does really take full advantage of the idea, though. Just to go, it's very how do I put this? It's very base, isn't it? I mean, the sexual jokes and all of that.
Right, which is pretty funny. I mean, I have to say, it's a perfectly competent show.
I've seen it. It is pretty funny.
What's weird, though, is you're right. It's very much a kind of sexy romp sort of thing. And having that little kid there is always kind of creepy. I mean, somehow you don't want kids when you're having a conversations and the revolving bedroom door that one of its characters got. The people who created that have actually come up with a new comedy that sounds interesting this year called The Big Bang Theory, which is about two intellectual giants with no social skills, and that kind of nerd. Theme is playing out a lot. That show that Fox did, The Winner, was about a kind of a loser character. And there's the IT Crowd, which is going to be introduced mid-season, which is about a bunch of techies whose boss tries to move them into the world of social interaction.
Okay. A few of the new programs for the fall season just announced this week. We go next to Susan in Milwaukee. Hi, Susan.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. I just have to give a couple of quick shout-outs. First of all, I love Tony Shalhoub and Monk, and that is appointment TV for me and my kids.
Oh, yeah.
We always fast-forward through the murder scene, which, the kids, they're 12, so I don't really think that that's appropriate. But the rest of the show is just humorous, edgy, and really mild, and I love Tony Shalhoub. And the fast-forwarding part brings me to my other point. Another huge shout-out to TiVo, and we were early adopters of TiVo, the real TiVo, the one, with the brand. And it really enables us to enjoy our TV, watch it on our own terms. We have all the Easter eggs open in terms of, being able to pretty much eliminate commercials when we want to. And one interesting thing that I just wanted to mention is that we find, because of the fact that I know that the advertisers are aware of TiVo, that sometimes we actually stop and watch the commercials, which is, I guess what I'm saying is that advertising probably will continue. It's just going to get a lot more creative and funny. And, we'll stop and watch the commercials occasionally and laugh at them. And I guess I just wanted to get your reaction to those comments, and I'll take them off the air.
Thanks, Susan. Yeah, she's onto something there. I just read an article about how advertisers are talking about becoming more seamless and becoming more entertaining.
Yeah, okay. First of all, Monk, I agree. One of the greatest characters in television history, and the best, most exciting stuff is going on in cable. Monk and The Shield and all the cable stuff.
So where is Monk now? What network?
Monk is on. Is the caller still there? I think is it USA or is it...
No, she took off.
I think it's USA. I should know that. But,
okay. It started as a broadcast network show, didn't it?
And FX. No, I don't think so.
Oh.
Okay. You could be right. I'm. You may be right. But anyway, it's a great show. It's on cable. And FX, of course, which has got Nip Tuck and the all of this great stuff. But as for the TiVo, the advertisers and the networks more so wish that this caller were at the upfronts right now, because this is the huge issue that they're now discussing, which is how in the world are we going to keep surviving with 30-second spots in the age of the DVR. They're expecting it to be 20% coverage of the country by the end of this season. They're projecting 50% by 2010. I think that's being overly conservative. Once you get this, you tell all your friends it's impossible to get rid of. I think it's going to go faster. What the caller points out that's really interesting is a phenomenon that nobody has quite figured out how to take advantage of, which is that when you're watching TiVo, you fast forward through the commercials. That's a fact. However, you are watching the commercials with more care and diligence than you ever did in the old days before DVRs. Because in the old days, the commercial would come on, you'd go to the bathroom, you'd diaper the child, you'd answer the phone, whatever. Now, in order to fast forward through those things, you've got to be paying rapt attention, because you want to push that button on to play from fast forward at the right time so you don't have to keep going back and forth. So they've got our attention more than ever before, but unfortunately, it's at 10 times the speed. So as the caller very wisely pointed out, they're going to have to design commercials that are so compelling at 10 times speed that either you get their message that fast, or you do what she said she sometimes does, which is to stop and watch it.
Which I do for the Mac PC commercials.
That's what everybody always uses, that example.
Yeah.
And that's the model that's going to happen. The other thing that they're going to start doing, and and this has all been done before back in 50s television, is to begin to have commercials with the people in the show itself. American Idol is the best model of this now, those Ford commercials where they get whoever's left in the competition to do a music video Ford commercial, and people watch those. They consider that part of the program. Back in the old days, Jed Clampett and Granny used to relax with a Winston and talk about it in the kitchen for commercials. Fred Flintstone and Wilma and Barney and Betty used to smoke Winston commercials.
I remember that.
That's hard to believe.
Yeah. Well, and it's hard to believe that 30 minutes have gone by so quickly, but we have to let you go, and thank you very much for your time.
It was my pleasure. Thank you.
All right. We'll talk to you again soon.
I'll look forward to it.
All right. Bye-bye. Bye-bye. That's Robert Thompson. He's founding director of the Bleier Center for Television and Popular Culture at Syracuse University, where he is professor of television and popular culture. But hold on, though. The program is not over yet. We're going to get on the line Rob Thomas. He's entertainment writer of the Capital Times, and we're going to continue the same conversation right here. So don't go anywhere. Thank you, Susan, for your call. Others are invited to join us at 800-486-8655. Once again, toll-free, 800-486-8655. In Milwaukee, 414-227-2050, as we talk television. The 06-07 season is coming to an end. Series finales and season finales abound. American Idol will have its big final show next week. All sorts of things happening on the TV front, along with the announced schedules for next year. So we're talking TV, and you are invited to join us, as has Rob Thomas now, entertainment writer of the Capital Times. He's on the guest line. John, Rob, are you there? Or are you there? Let's find you. Hi, Rob. Hi, Rob. Are you there?
Nope, this isn't Rob.
Oh, okay. Let me find him. Rob, are you there?
I'm here.
Okay. Sorry. Thank you, John. I found you. So let's. Were you able to hear any of the first half hour?
I heard some of it. Yeah.
Okay.
It was very interesting.
Have you got some particular favorites that you're either going to lose this season or you're looking forward to next season?
I don't know. I finally caught my first episode of The Gilmore Girls, the last episode on Tuesday. And I actually did quite enjoy it a bit. A friend is going to get me the DVDs to catch up on that. So that was probably the one I'm losing this year. I'm going to miss the most. Most of the other ones, I think, were not too big a surprise. The one I thought was a big surprise that was canceled maybe was CBS show Jericho, which had a big following in the fall. It was like one of the big buzz shows. And then it kind of died in the spring, and CBS just decided not to renew it. And that's one I had heard a lot of good things about and was hoping to catch up on. So I'm kind of surprised that one went so quickly.
Yeah. Are you a particular fan of a running show that's coming back? I know Heroes.
I'm a Lost fanatic.
Yeah.
The first thing I do when I get in the office is meet my fellow Lost fanatic in the newsroom. We talk about last night's show. So that's really interesting because that'll have its big two-hour finale next Wednesday, and then it's off the air until, I believe, February of 2008. So that's a long time to wait to find out, you know, to leave an audience hanging.
Yeah, I noticed that the networks are not only announcing their fall lineup, but the mid-season lineup already.
Yeah, the whole idea that you're not on the fall schedule, that used to be a real stigma that you'd be kind of stuck in at mid-season. And that's really falling apart now, I think. Like 24, I think, will always now be in the spring. You know, Dancing with the Stars, I mean, American Idol. It's almost like the spring is becoming like a second fall. And you're always thinking about, you know, the networks are always thinking about how they're going to program in the spring as well as the fall. And in a way, almost, I would rather, if I was had a show on the air, I'd almost rather not be in the fall with that glut and wait until the spring.
Yeah, and then there's the summer series as well.
That's right.
There are new things coming up here in June.
That's right. The one I'm looking forward to, I think, in the summer is reality show, because I think summer is really, like, strong for reality TV. I don't know if we dim our brain cells a little bit and enjoy it a little bit more, but Fox has one called On the Lot, with, I believe, Mark Burnett of Survivor and Steven Spielberg are co-producing, that follows some aspiring filmmakers who are trying to get a $1 million budget, which is not actually that much, for a for an independent movie. I think that one should be pretty fun, kind of like Project Greenlight.
I saw the promo for that, and they said $1 million. I thought, what are they going to do with $1 million?
Episode of Law and Order is like $4 million
now. I know.
Now, so yeah.
Let's go back to callers, and we'll continue to talk TV. Nathan is in Eau Claire. Hi, Nathan.
Hey, how's it going this morning?
Good. How are you?
Great.
Pretty good. I kind of wanted to bring up an issue that the last guest kind of talked about during the end of his time, the commercial thing. The DVR, I'm not quite sure that it's influencing people to actually watch the commercials, even if you have to, you know, hit that play button at the beginning of the show again. My friend works for a cable company, and he has a DVR, and his DVR, when he pushes the play button, it actually rewinds 2 seconds. So if you go into the show, it'll go back to the, you know, to the beginning of where the clip is supposed to begin. Also, I think that the whole genre of sitcoms has kind of almost become stale in a sense. In the sense that, you know, they've done the family thing, going through the family problems 1,000 times, and now we're sort of getting onto gimmicky variations of it. In the case of My Name is Earl, you know, it's kind of like, okay, he's poor and kind of trashy, but it's the same issues coming up over and over. And I'd just like to hear your guest's comments about that.
Okay, thanks, Nathan. He's put a couple things on the table. Let's start with the DVR. And, you know, I had a system that just did a 30-second skip. I didn't see anything.
Huh. I'm still working on VHS, so I just have to fast-forward through them all. I mean, it's an ongoing struggle, I think, between the manufacturers and the audience to try and keep them from watching commercials and stuff. I think it will be one of those things where whatever technology comes up with, then the networks will find a way around it, or, you know, they'll just program a show called, like, based after the Geico caveman or something like that. So in some way, there'll be no escaping it.
Yeah. How are the broadcasters? I mean, they're still staying on top. $48 billion is nothing to sneeze at. They're doing pretty well despite all the competition,
yeah,
aren't they?
Yeah, I think you hear a lot of nervousness. But basically, yeah, I mean, it's a whopper of an industry. And certainly a lot of the networks, whether it's the premium channels like HBO or the basic cable like FX, which have a lot of the you know, the big critically acclaimed shows like The Shield or The Sopranos or stuff, they still love to have those network revenue dollars, those network ratings. I mean, there's just something about being on the networks, I think, that is there's a cachet there that a lot of people aspire to. It's the first place you look for a new show.
Yeah, they're not dead yet.
No.
And then Nathan also wanted to talk about the current state of the sitcom.
Yeah, and I do agree. And certainly you see a lot of stuff that seems very stale. And you know, I was looking at the fall schedule and their shows, and it's like, well, this is going to be the next Seinfeld or something, and the, you know, the same retreads. But then, on the other hand, it really depends on the execution. I mean, what could have been more played out a genre than the workplace sitcom? And then The Office comes along and is a fabulous show that's just been getting better and better every year. I mean, it was building on that popular British show. So it's really all in the execution, I think. And, you know, there's only a few ideas going around anyway, they say, in Hollywood. And it all depends on how you do it. And all of a sudden, it can become fresh and relevant and most of all funny again.
There is a 21st century twist, though, to The Office. And I also think of Arrested Development and the Larry David show.
Right.
And that is the use of improvisation.
Yeah, although I think The Office is actually not improvised. If I understand, that's one where they actually just sort of make it seem improvised, but it's very tightly scripted from what I've read.
Really?
Yeah, but I think that is interesting, that I think the one thing people are a little tired of is, you know, punchline, laugh track, set up, punchline, laugh track. That sort of familiar rhythm of sitcoms, I think people have grown a little, you know, too familiar with, whereas sort of a more natural sort of comedic rhythm like these shows, which I guess is more like movies in a way, or at least independent movies, feels a lot more fresher and funnier.
Yeah, well, there's a definite difference in tone when you go to the one camera versus the three camera live audience.
Right, and cut out the laugh tracks. I remember when Sports Night came out in 1998, Aaron Sorkin's it was a comedy about a fictional sort of ESPN company, and he didn't use a laugh track, or I think actually the network forced a laugh track on the first season, and then they cut it the second, and other networks were just chortling at this horrible decision that ABC had done to put this show on, you know, very unlike anything else, and now that seemed to be the wave of the future for half-hour scripted comedy.
Yeah. Nathan, thanks for your call. Bob is in Fontana. Hi, Bob.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Yep.
I'm probably not up to speed on what's going on television, because I don't really watch television. I got tired of it because it seems to be so bland and narrow. You know, it's politically correct. We know that the government office of drug abuse is offering money to shows to inject anti-drug messages into dramatic themes, you know. And I just don't want to be propagandized. I want to watch TV shows where the government is a dark, malevolent force, you know, and not a good force with just a few bad people and things like that. You know, I want to see people who work in the underground economy portrayed as good people. I want to see people who take drugs who aren't all bad pedophiles, you know. But it's like a corporate workplace television, you know. You can't afford to offend anyone, it seems. And so it's just a narrow ground for artistic endeavors, you know.
Bob, appreciate the call very much. What do you think about that?
Well, I mean, it's certainly true that, you know, a lot of shows want to play it safe, or they tiptoe to the edge of being controversial, and then they sort of jerk their hands back on the networks. The one show that did come to mind, that CBS, by the way, has a very adventurous schedule this fall, totally out of character for them, is a show called Swingtown, an ensemble drama about couples in the 70s living in Chicago who I believe are swingers, who are wife swappers. Which should be sort of the cultural hot button show of the fall. If anybody's picketing anything this fall, it'll probably be that show. So I mean, there's room for that kind of stuff, but obviously, you know, I think networks do sort of want to get the broadest possible audience, and if you want something edgier like that, you do have to sort of pony up for basic cable or Showtime or something like that.
Yeah, the kind of utopian television that Bob is talking about, can he find it on cable?
Well, boy, The Shield is an extremely dark show. If you want something a little more malevolent, you know. But then again, I mean, he's mentioning, you know, the government is an evil, malevolent, dark force. That was The X-Files for 7 years, basically. I mean, so that was on Fox on, 8 o'clock on Sunday. So, I mean, stuff certainly slips in there. Maybe if you have aliens and ghosts and stuff, you can get more controversial content like that on the air.
Yeah. Quick break and then right back. Our guest is Rob Thomas, entertainment writer for the Capital Times in Madison, not to be confused with Robert Thompson, who is our first guest. He's professor of television and popular culture at Syracuse University. So thanks to him as well. But plenty of time left in this hour for your call, 800-486-8655. Hope you can stay tuned for our 10 o'clock hour. With the passing of Jerry Falwell, we thought we'd talk about the history and the impact of the religious right on American politics from pre-Falwell days to post-Falwell days. The religious right in America. That's our 10 o'clock hour. We continue this hour with Rob Thomas of the Capital Times, looking at the new television season just announced this week for fall of 07 and the season that's coming to an end as we speak. Back to the phones, and Tom is calling from Milwaukee. Hi, Tom. You're on the air.
Hey, how you doing?
Good.
Got a question. When we watched the show, a group of my buddies kind of got hooked on it, and myself, called Men in Trees. And all of a sudden, it disappeared. Just wondered if it's coming back or if that was just a test pilot. And, I'll take my answer off the air.
Okay. Thanks, Tom.
I've heard that's coming back in the fall.
Yeah, I believe it is.
Yeah. So you're in luck.
I forget now. I'm going through my papers. That's the CBS?
ABC. That's
ABC.
The one with Anne Heche, and she's New York, sort of like a Northern Exposure kind of riff, and got very good reviews, and that's interesting because I guess I would have maybe picked that as a more show that appealed to women, but I'd heard it's very funny and engaging and getting a pretty broad audience, so it may be able to build on that next year.
Yeah, I remember seeing some pretty good press on that. It did get great reviews.
Yeah.
Reviews don't always translate into ratings, though. Did it do well ratings wise? Do you know?
I guess it did well enough. I mean, I don't think it was a Grey's Anatomy level hit for ABC, but I think it drew some of the same sort of audience, I think, and you know, some of that what you want is necessarily big ratings, but getting sort of those right people and the people that the advertisers are looking for. It had a promising first year, I guess I would say, and it could build on that.
Okay, Tom. So Men in Trees back for the fall,
yep,
on ABC. So look for that. Thanks, Tom. And Carol is in Chippewa Falls. Hi, Carol.
Hi. I wanted to say that the comment that you made about comedy series being trying to be politically correct prompted me to call in about my favorite show, which is Boston Legal, and they're not politically correct, and they're very edgy, and they bring in things that the war, abortion, a number of things that they talk about that they make good points about, but they manage to be funny, kind of edgy, and make you think, and plus it's really wacky, so I like it.
Yeah, I get, and that's a show that, you know, on the outside is a legal show, one of the most, you know, familiar genres in television. But, you know, I think that's a David E. Kelly show, if I'm not mistaken. He just finds ways to get just every single hot button issue you can imagine in those shows, and more than you could possibly imagine. And also, yeah, it's just great, you know, William Shatner and James Spader.
They're
just
so
great actors all
funny,
the way up and down.
Yes, I like that show a lot.
Yeah.
So does my husband. So.
Good.
Thank you.
Thanks,
Carol.
Might that be indicative, though, that the what's acceptable has been sort of squeezed a little bit? The fringes are gone. Boston Legal is certainly no Smothers Brothers. They're not going to get yanked.
No, though she's right. They've been. I do remember them getting pretty pointed about
yeah.
the warrant. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I think part of it is, like, you know, some shows will sort of step out there and be like, we're going to be controversial, we're going to tackle the big issues. And then some sort of slip in under the door and be like, well, we're just going to be a comedy or a cop show or a legal show, and end up, you know, really being sort of interesting and kind of wild with that. And sometimes that's the more successful route, just because you don't have the target on your back as much.
Yeah. Donna is in Milwaukee. She calls us. Hi, Donna.
Hey, how are you?
Good.
Good. I just wanted to make the comment that, sort of like the presidential elections, we get exactly what we want every time. And unfortunately, that may please more people than I'm surprised to understand it does please. One of the things I just found out yesterday, that my new favorite show, Reigns, is not going to be canceled. And I thought it walked that line between giving people what they want, such as, you know, the neurotic police officer, damaged in some sort of way, a little bit of the supernatural. But more than that, it sort of gave us a glimpse into how he thought, his thought processes, which is how he ends up solving his crime. They gave us like 5 shots of that. I rushed home on Friday to see it, and I read on the Internet, yesterday it's not coming back. And I thought it did walk that line, giving people what they obviously like with all the supernatural stuff and the police shows. But I guess they just took it a step too far, and there's only so much leeway I think we as a television-watching community will allow a show to go. So we get what we want. We get what we ask for, which is banal, mind-numbing silliness.
Yeah, sometimes that's true. And I mean, about Raines, I would watch Jeff Goldblum read the phone book. He's just such an interesting actor, and every scene he makes really interesting. Yeah, I don't know why Raines wouldn't work. I don't know if people thought, oh, it's so much like these other shows, and didn't take the time to see it and realize it was something pretty different, or what the problem is there. It's hard to tell with a new. It's just so hard for a new show to get traction. And Friday is a tough night. I mean, it's always a very tough night to build an audience on.
Is it that we get what we want, or is it? I remember hearing the phrase "least objectionable viewing" back in my college communication days. Is it we just kind of flip around and find the thing that we hate the least?
Yeah, I don't know, because I mean, certainly, you know, some shows that are quite daring do survive, and some shows that are quite bland do tank. I think it's a mix of stuff. I think I really think with television, we're increasingly becoming niche audiences, and you know, some people are watching King of Queens, and some people never watch King of Queens. Some people watch Gilmore Girls. Some people never watch it. We're sort of losing that that kind of a Cosby Show, or even 15 years ago, an ER type thing, where just everybody watched it and talked about it the next day. So it's almost like now, you know, which niche is bigger than the other one, and which wants to get the networks want to attract.
Yeah, that is a great sort of cultural thing, the whole water cooler issue, when you talk with folks at the office the next day. I guess there are still a few things like that. You mentioned Lost.
Yeah, although it's just me and this other person who talk about it, and a few other people. You know, The Sopranos, I think, still has that, especially this season, because it's the last season. People are still talking about it. And frankly, you know, the big one would be American Idol, or even Dancing with the Stars. That's the one I think that people, you know, I guess I would say that is one that draws a lot of people, and everybody's talking about it the next day, especially when somebody gets voted off.
Yeah, I remember when I was a kid, it was Laugh-In. We would talk about every minute of Laugh-In after we got together at school, and then later, and then in the high school days, Saturday Night Live.
Yeah,
and do the voices back and forth, and it, you know, it's fun to share all of that.
Yeah, I mean, television should be a communal experience, whether you're watching it with your family or you're talking about it with people the next day. And I think, you know, one thing about you mentioned the modular online viewing television is now nobody's necessarily seeing all the shows at the same time. They're either watching it on TV, or they're waiting till the next day and watching it on NBC.com, or they're waiting until next year and watching it on DVD.
Yeah, and with all the harsh words that can be said, rightfully probably, about television, that is something that's being lost, and I'm don't quite know where the replacement is. But yeah, that communal experience.
Yeah. Absolutely.
And I guess why my question earlier asked, how does broadcast television continue to be such a powerhouse? I guess maybe that's the one thing that it has going for it.
Yeah, and I mean, it's right there. It's in your living room, and you know, I mean, networks is free. There's still plenty of people who don't get cable, and I think it does come back to that I think we're not at the point yet where everybody's watching, you know, the basic cable channels as much as they're watching network, and people will still go back to that, and in part because they know other people are going to it, and other people will be talking about it the next day, so they want to be part of it too.
Yeah, Donna, thank you. Dane is calling from Sheboygan. Hi.
Hi, I'm calling kind of in regards to DVR and advertising issues that have been mentioned a few times. I guess I'm 22, and kind of as I feel like the younger generation, I know that just about any generation watches TVs, but we're the generation that they're going to have to start to cater to soon. And most of my TV, I think we're very like instant gratification in America. Most of the time that I watch TV, it was either recorded on DVR or online or some of the other ways. And I guess I can't understand why they're not going more towards a lot more product placement in shows. I think in the future, in my mind, the best way that they're going to make revenue is full half-an-hour shows, no breaks, where the advertising is, the advertisers work with the writers. And that's, I think, what, with some of the nervousness of, you know, they're not getting enough money now, I think that's what it's going to come down to.
Is that something you would oppose, or would you be okay with
no,
that?
No, I mean, that's kind of, I won't get the guest feel on that, because that's what I think has to happen. I don't really have a problem with it. I know some of, probably the writers and some other people might oppose that, but TV's not going to be around if no advertisers want to pay for it, and I don't want to, like I said, it's instant gratification. I want it now, and I don't want breaks. So I guess I would rather have that rather than lose TV. If that makes sense.
Yeah, yeah. I don't know, because I mean, I do sort of have. I mean, it depends on the show. Like The Apprentice, baldly puts in product placement. They'll work on a campaign or something like that for a new, you know, shampoo or something like that, and it's pretty bald product placement. You know, if all of a sudden Coke Zero cans fell from the sky on Lost or something like that, I guess I would have a problem with it. But the problem is if it's woven so seamlessly into the show, then it may not be too seamless for the advertisers to really go for. So it's definitely, like I said, it's a very interesting tension there between the shows, the advertisers who were really right on the bus, and the viewers, and trying to find that balance where everybody is happy.
And I imagine they would love to have Dane in New York this week to talk to them about. They're having that very conversation, aren't
exactly.
they?
Exactly. Yeah.
About this sort of seamless advertising, actually working with the writers. There is, and Dane identified himself as a 22-year-old. Is there a generation gap here? Different perspectives from different generations. The older generation saying too much of a sort of a Brave New World vibe for me.
I don't know. I think nobody likes commercials. I don't think, but there is probably something to that. That I think that younger generations are so used to product placement in movies, pop-up ads, and their favorite website. You know, I mean, I remember 20 years ago when it was unheard of for like a rock band to do a Coke commercial. That was like selling out. Now everybody does. Now everybody puts their music in movies.
Yeah,
I think.
They sponsor the tours.
Exactly. Yeah.
The American Express
before on the big screens. I mean, it's all sort of, you know, those lines are almost completely erased, and you're almost silly for holding out and not taking some of that sponsorship money. I think it comes down to everything else where, you know, if the quality of the show isn't impacted, then I think people won't really notice.
Yeah.
But then I do sort of wonder, like, I mean, will they be really able to sell, you know, Budweiser in the middle of The Shield or something like that? You know, I mean, I think, can it be so seamless that it won't affect the show, but yet still move units?
Yeah, interesting topic. We'll have to revisit it sometime. I imagine the writers would have a lot to say about this.
I imagine they would.
Yeah. Dane, thanks a lot. Keep listening. Ray is in Eau Claire. Hi, Ray.
Hi. I was just trying to figure out what is the purpose of watching reality shows or any type of drama show. Is it like an escape of reality? I mean, what's the point? I don't watch TV anymore.
You don't watch, but why do we watch TV? Okay, well...
That's a good question. Not to get philosophical, but I think, you know...
No, go ahead.
Well, hell, storytelling goes back to the very beginning of civilization, I think. And I think with television, it's just a little more, you know, you do get that sort of ongoing serial storytelling, whether it's, you know, overt like Lost or 24, where you're telling a single story over the course of, you know, 5 seasons or 20 episodes, or you're just visiting with the same group of people in the office or the family every week. I think that's the appeal of it. Obviously different people have different interests in that, but I think that's something that always will always be there, whether it's, you know, TV or movies or books or, you know, online videos or whatever.
Ray, did you make a conscious decision to stop watching television, or did you just sort of drift away from it?
I couldn't stand watching it anymore.
Yeah. Where do you get your storytelling fix? Books, movies?
Books.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Now, see, the difference is, though, when you're watching a movie, I can watch movies. That's fine. But any type of TV series that it's like a fake episode of someone's reality, or reality shows where people are making millions of dollars for us watching them do something that we could do on our own. I mean, I don't understand the purpose of it.
Yeah. I guess I can empathize with Ray. There are some things I see on television where I just throw my hands up and say, how is this on television?
Oh, absolutely.
Who's watching this?
Oh, absolutely. And certainly reality TV. It's like you literally cannot think of an idea too ridiculous that it won't be on television next year. Reality television, I always think of just sort of, especially now, just glorified game shows, basically, or immersive game shows where they're in the game for, you know, 20 weeks instead of, you know, 22 minutes or something like that.
Yeah.
But some of it's very entertaining. I mean, you know, you see the personalities come out and stuff. I would say actually with TV dramas, I think actually the more interesting storytelling is now going on television rather than in movies. I think movies have sort of, a lot of mainstream movies have become very safe and very predictable in their storytelling, whereas TV is, you know, whether it's Lost with the flashbacks or The Sopranos with a really sort of interesting amoral take on the mob. I mean, that's where the really interesting storytelling and acting is going on
and,
in a lot of cases.
And our time is up. Thank you so much for spending the time with us. Rob Thomas,
thanks a lot.
All right, take care. Rob Thomas is entertainment writer for the Capital Times. We say goodbye to him, and we thank Robert Thompson of Syracuse University, professor of television and popular culture, who joined us for our first segment. Thanks also to John Treader, who took the phone calls today, and Rhonda Fanning, who produced the program. I'm Peter Donalds, in for Kathleen Dunn. The Religious Right and Its Impact on the American Politics, in our 10 o'clock hour. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.